Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Each week, we tackle a different issue that's uniquely Portland. So tune in every Saturday to hear a new episode complete with interviews and editorial that helps explain our city. From Portland's leading paper comes a brand new way to engage with the news, sports, arts, and culture. Stick around. Welcome to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Today is January 30th. We've got a great show for you guys. If you've listened to the Dive Podcast before, you know the drill. We start off with the headlines of the week, then go deep into the Wednesday cover story, and sign off with the quote of the week. And honestly, guys, this quote of the week I think might be the best so far. It's awesome. So with no further ado, let's get into it. This is the 90-second News Flash. The big story this week was our mayor of Portland pepper spraying a man who was accosting him. This isn't the first time the mayor has been approached, aggressively. In early January, the mayor was reportedly struck by another citizen who was confronting him, but this time the mayor came prepared and pepper sprayed the man who was accosting him outside of the McMinimins that the mayor was eating at. The mayor reportedly did give warning that he had pepper spray on him and that he wasn't afraid to use it. Since that event took place, the man who was pepper sprayed has apologized for his actions, but it has also come out that that man has been a donor to Trump political action committees and also went into the McMinimins after being pepper sprayed and requested to see the mayor's dinner tab. What was he expecting to see? I don't know. My guess is as good as yours, but probably a burger with a side of soggy sweet potato fries because honestly, guys, McMinimins does that order so well. A man has been charged with second-degree murder after a multi-block hit and run on the 25th. Paul Rivas killed one and injured nine. Members of the Service Employees International Union got the highly coveted invitation to get the COVID vaccine. More and more Portlanders are getting licensed for concealed handguns, citing political upheaval as a main reason. Reports show Portland police dogs are biting white people less than black people. We got some snow this week. OSU discovered a new shade of blue. Portland native and professional football player Ndamukong Suh has had a very busy week. He's headed to the Super Bowl, and he also opened a fried chicken restaurant called Bay's in downtown Portland. I've been there twice this week. It is fantastic. Folks, this has been the 90-second News Flash. Now it's time for an investigation into the cover story. This week, reporter Nigel Jaquis wrote about how a new tax on carbon emissions will affect two Oregon factories. One-third of the $11 million tax dollars this new tax will raise is coming from these two plants, one of which is Owens Brockway Glass Plant and the other is Evra's Steel Plant. Due to the unique and arguably unfair way this tax has been written, if the tax gets passed, these two plants will most likely close. Aside from the hundreds of people who will be laid off from good-paying jobs, another impact of this plant closure is wrapped in history. In 1971, the state passed the Oregon Bottle Bill, making it the first state in the nation that recycles every single glass bottle. Where are the glass bottles recycled? Owens Brockway. If Owens Brockway is closed, two things will happen to our glass bottles. They will either A, end up in a landfill, or B, have to be transported by truck to Seattle, which will crowd freeways and produce lots of diesel emissions. To learn more about this tax and this story, I got Nigel to give us the inside scoop. Why did you choose this story?
I chose this story because I think it is timely. Climate issues are, I think, front and center in many people's minds. I chose this story because it's a story about a large part of Portland's economy, the industrial manufacturing sector. Portland still has, unlike a lot of cities, a big manufacturing sector. This policy goes right at that sector. So in a cover story, we're looking for something that is timely, something that has conflict, and something that has policy implications that affect a lot of people. So I felt as if this story had all of those.
One of the main characters that you guys talk about, that you talk about in your story, is Andrea Durbin. Durbin was hired by the mayor to lead the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. She wrote the emissions tax that you guys are writing about. What's wrong with the way that Durbin went about writing this bill?
I don't know if the word wrong is the word I would use. It's unusual. I guess what's unusual about this process is how fast it moved, how little consultation there was, how there was even no consultation with the governor and legislators who've been working on a cap and trade program at the state level for the past, actually for 13 years, but intensely for the past 2 years. So here you have a policy that is going right at the same people who will be affected by cap and trade and will overlap it in many ways. And the city had not even consulted those people. So I would say highly unusual for such a major policy to be so to move so quickly, so quietly.
On his first day in office, his first couple minutes in office, President Biden signed an executive order to cancel this Keystone Pipeline. People came out immediately and said that will X thousands of good paying jobs, with Biden's theory being that it's not clean energy and we need to be thinking about climate change. You cover a bottle recycling plant that would lose a lot of jobs, good paying jobs as well. Can't we just look at this plant and say, well, it's creating a lot of carbon emissions and we've got to fix our climate and this is just a casualty? Or is that the wrong way to be looking at this?
Well, the difference, I think, is that the Keystone Pipeline doesn't yet exist. And so, yes, there might be some really good jobs that would be created in its construction, but those jobs don't exist. The Owens-Brockway glass plant, which is out near Portland International Airport, has existed since 1956. And it's got a really crucial role to play in Oregon's bottle bill. Every glass bottle that is recycled in Oregon goes to that plant. That's about 440,000 beer bottles a day, equivalent about 104 million pounds of glass last year, that would otherwise go into a landfill. Because you know the alternative is to truck it up to Washington or down to California, which is really a huge use of diesel fuel and crowds an already crowded I-5, so not a great idea.
It's also interesting the point that you make there where the alternative is poor for the environment. Like shutting this down either puts a lot of glass in a landfill or it causes a lot of diesel emissions by trucking. So I think that's also really interesting that it's not just like, oh, once we shut it down, zero emissions, totally clean. I like what Commissioner Hardesty says when she says something along the lines of, we don't have years and years to carefully plan out the perfect fuel emission tax. Sure, that this may not be the ideal bill, but time's running out. Our economists and environmental and scientists tell us time's running out to try to fix the way that we are handling our emissions. Could somebody look at this and say, well, it's not the perfect bill, but it's better than nothing?
In a vacuum, you could look at that. We don't exist in a vacuum, however. So for the past 2 years, all the big emitters, polluters in the state have been at the table with the legislature. And I think part of the frustration that I heard from some of those industrial companies is they said, hey, look, we know we have to reduce. We're doing it. We're doing it in conjunction with a state agreement. So then the city kind of comes along and springs on us a separate, unrelated program. It feels as if we're being hit twice on the same emissions.
So it's not this bill or nothing. It's this bill or a bill that was developed with the people who are going to be taxed, who are at the table in a more open and less closed way. Is that correct?
That's correct. There is already a state process that's happening.
$11 million in taxes, a third of that paid by two companies. How the hell did that happen?
Well, I think you're an economics student, and I think that economists would tell you that the best taxes are broadly based or as broadly based as they can be, so that there is an incentive for people to comply, and there's no incentive for people to say, well, I'm paying all the tax. If I just leave, I'll be better off. And of course, that would leave everybody else worse off. So it's a very, very, very narrowly based tax.
Right. And then another thing that you mentioned along that same line of thought is that they've reduced their emissions more than any other of the four major polluters since in the last 30 years. So
that's another aspect of tax policy. I won't pretend to be an expert on tax policy, but fairness is a key issue. And so when you look at who's producing, where the emissions are coming from, by far the largest source of emissions in Multnomah County is transportation. That's cars and trucks. And what we've seen over the past 30 years, which is kind of the relevant measuring period, is that transportation emissions have gone up. That's in part because we have more people, but also because people are continuing to buy SUVs and drive dirty diesel trucks and so on. We've actually seen a 51% reduction in emissions from in industrial sector. And the industrial sector is only 12% of all total emissions. So this tax is really unfair. It's targeting the group that has actually done the most to reduce its emissions.
If you had to guess, what do you think happens to this tax?
We'll either see significant changes or we'll see this disappear. It's very clear that the city chose the easiest tax to levy, and it should, by all rights, be going after transportation, which is where the real problem is. That's more complicated, would take more time, would be less popular. I mean, it's really right. Easy to tax two companies that aren't headquartered here, that nobody really understands their business, nobody really knows who works there. That's pretty easy. It's pretty hard to tell every resident of this county, hey, we're going to make life more expensive for you because we need to bring your emissions down. So the city took the easy path. It seems really simple to tax the smokestacks, but there are a lot of unintended consequences. I think that's the real takeaway from this story for me.
And is that the takeaway that you want readers to take away from the story as well? Or is that something different?
No, I think that's it. Look, I mean, the fact that the policy was created in secret and nobody was consulted, that's a little bit inside baseball. Why do I really care? Well, I really care because it's just not as simple as if we tax these smokestacks, everything that follows is going to be good. That's not the case. That's why making policy is really hard. And I want to be clear that I think Andrew Durbin and Mayor Wheeler and everybody else involved here acted in good faith. They want to do the right thing for the right reasons. The point of the story is that it's saving the world is a great idea, and it sounds great and it feels good, but it's not easy to do.
As a journalist, you're writing a story about tax code, about city council, about recycling. How do you make those topics interesting, which you did, but how do you go about doing that?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think what I tried to do was make the story a little bit about people. I think Jules Bailey in a lot of ways is an interesting person because he was a legislator. He chaired the House Environment Committee. He worked on climate change legislation successfully and is today the chair of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters Board, which is the biggest environmental group in the state. His day job, however, is to make sure that the bottle bill continues to operate. So here he is, a very strong environmentalist who's worked a long time on policies that are similar to what the city is hoping to do. But if they're successful, they destroy the glass recycling part of the bottle bill. So he's a person in conflict. You know, he wants, as an environmentalist, to see fewer emissions. As a steward of the bottle bill, he wants to keep that glass out of landfills. So anytime you can find a person who is sort of driven by conflicting motives, both are good motives in his case, he's an interesting person.
With that introduction, we invited Jules Bailey onto the show to give us his perspective. Here are some questions we have for him. One of the things that Nigel talks about in the article is that the bottle bill might be kaput if this thing happens. Who cares? Why should we care about that?
Well, if this happens, the bottle bill will continue, and the bottle bill is resilient. But I think the point of the article, and one that I would strongly agree with, is that there are some unintended consequences here for glass recycling, and that one of the features of the Oregon bottle bill is that all of the material that we take back is recycled, and none of it's going into landfills. None of it's being shipped overseas. It's all being recycled. And for glass, 100% of all of that glass is being recycled right in the Portland area.
What is a climate mindful bill that you would support?
I've been a long proponent of carbon taxes and cap and trade. In fact, I introduced those bills in the legislature, sponsored them and tried to push them, I'd be very supportive of a statewide carbon tax or a cap and dividend bill that would regulate carbon at a statewide basis and reinvest the revenues from that back into reducing carbon. And that gives businesses both a carrot and a stick to bring their carbon down. I think that's really responsible policy, and I'm strongly supportive of it, have been for a long time. That's not what we see here.
You ran for mayor.
I did.
Talk to me a little bit about...
Got my clock cleaned.
Yeah. Talk to me a little about how you think the mayor is doing in terms of a leader in the community. Do you think he's leading on this topic well?
I do think that Mayor Wheeler has been a consistent and strong environmental champion. And there's a reason that he was endorsed by the environmental community when he ran for re-election and supported. There's a lot of aspects to climate policy, and there's a lot of really important things that the city of Portland can do on climate and is doing on climate. A clean fuel standard for the city, really important. It's just unfortunate that in the course of that, I think we got out a little bit over our skis on this one and missed maybe even expanding on some of those really successful things that the city has done. I think the bottom line is, if people want to know who's responsible for climate change, the unfortunate answer is you got to look in the mirror. Wow. Industries don't exist in a vacuum, right? We don't produce bottles for bottle cigs. We produce bottles because people demand beer and you need a package to deliver it, right? We don't produce gasoline for gasoline cigs.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years, Jules?
I hope I'm still doing bottles and cans. I love it.
Wow.
This is a really, really fun job. Basically, I get to go to work every day for a not-for-profit cooperative and do good environmental work that I feel like moves the needle on climate and on product stewardship.
What's got the prettiest bottle or can, and what's the best bottle or can? Like, what's the best drink?
I got to be completely a homer here and be like, the best bottle is our bottle, the refillable bottle that we make. Honestly, one of the reasons I love my job is going to the grocery store and seeing bottles that I help design. That's on awesome. The shelf, full of beer that I love, that I get to buy and take home. And the best feeling ever, so good, is back in the before times when we actually had barbecues, having a friend come over and bring a six pack or a bunch of bottles in my bottles, and they don't even know they're my bottles, and they put them down. I'm like, those are my bottles. I designed those. Those are my babies. All my friends are, they've learned not to do that, because then they are subjected to an hour of me telling them every physical feature of the bottle and how it was manufactured and why it's strong. And they're like, yeah, no, take a chill pill. I'm going to just go drink this beer.
Yeah, no, you got to get bags of wine whenever you come to Mr. Bailey's house.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right, Jules, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, my pleasure. Let me know if you need anything else.
We end this episode with quote of the week. COVID has changed every aspect of our life, including how we eat and drink. Restaurants have been struggling in large part because alcohol sales are down due to no one eating inside anymore. To combat the drop in liquor sales, Oregon passed legislation to allow bars and restaurants to offer drinks and cocktails to go. However, the law requires that each drink is accompanied with a substantial meal, so the bar Pay Dirt is offering a complimentary bread and cheese sandwich with their drinks to satisfy this requirement. When pressed further about their sandwich offering, Pay Dirt's owner Ezra Ace Cariff declined to comment, saying, quote, "A good chef doesn't reveal their secrets, but it's definitely the whitest of white breads and the yellowest of pre-sliced cheeses." That is awesome. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. You've been listening to the Dive Podcast. We will see you in February. I can never say it right. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.